Yeah, it's amazing that if you are like have a lot of energy, and if you are a bit naive, so it can take you pretty far.
Exactly. Yeah exactly.
And in hindsight, maybe a bit too far.
Aalto University Podcast.
This is Leading for Interdisciplinary Creativity, and I am your host, Irina Viippola. In this episode, we will talk about the early days of the IDBM program, the challenges and highlights of interdisciplinary teamwork, and the art of balancing creativity and structure in business. Can you foster innovation and creativity while keeping things on track? We'll hear from three brilliant alumni from the first IDBM batch who share their secrets to nurturing a creative culture that drives results. Get ready for inspiration, insights, and practical tips to enhance your creative management skills. We have here the siblings Krista and Markus Paloheimo, along with Arne Aroma. Welcome.
Thank you.
Can you tell a bit about yourself for introduction? Markus, can you start?
So I am the engineer of the team, and after the first startup in Finland that we established together and got bankrupted, I ended up working for Fiskars for 11 years, and recently, or not recently, but past 15 years, I have been an independent product design consultant, and that's what
that's
I do.
That's about it.
Okay, good. Who wants to go next?
Krista.
Yeah, okay. I first of all, I love that you still call us a team. I'm a first member of the team. and we are a good team still, friends, even though after the bankruptcy. But my role in that company, the startup company we founded, was to be the marketing and kind of like the financial. And I was the one to blame, perhaps, for the bankruptcy also, I would say. But I ended up being an entrepreneur for many, many years. Have worked on a commercial side. And now, about 6 months ago, returned to work for a bigger company called Rebel Group and as a strategist at the moment. I have also a strong background in being an entrepreneur.
Okay, nice to have you here. And Arni.
Right, so I'm the industrial designer of the gang, and I think that I have one of the flattest CVs in the field, because I started Pentagon Design, the design consultancy, with a student colleague next year, 30 years ago. So
oh,
it's like
wow.
Same age as maybe strictly taken, I think we're a bit older than IDBM. I don't know whether it's important, but it was really your company we're talking about this kind of biotech company. And then you somehow lured me into it, which was definitely an experience. And I think also, I remember when it got to the point of the bankruptcy, but already then I think there was the idea that if you are an entrepreneur somewhere else than in Finland, the bankruptcy actually looks quite good on your CV, because it's really a sign that you have like really tried out your best and you know the whole path.
Mm-hmm.
So it's every now and then, I think I still today somehow think that it might be a nice experience to do something similar. I'm not sure whether it would be us three, but to have a startup, have the enthusiasm, and somehow like to put all into one
exactly.
one thing.
Mm. Yeah.
But if I remember right, that you said that you were lured into this company of ours. If I remember right, the situation was such that we had already done this injection molding mold, which
right.
was like at that time pretty expensive investment. And it turned out that this product that was supposed to protect biscuits actually broke them.
Right.
And we were in a kind of a desperate situation. And then we came to you at Arni.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you help us?
Okay. Yeah, that might be the story, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And Anyway, so this company that you then established, it of course happened after the IDBM, right? Or was
it was during the IDBM,
and it was the sort of industry project for you, or no? Did you do another?
No, we did something else. We did that together. I remember for Oras.
Exactly, and that, yeah,
but that time we were already working around this, also this own company.
Yeah.
But we got to know you.
Through IDBM.
Okay, so you did the IDB industry project for Oras at that time, and then the company Biteback came after.
Well, about the same time.
Well, can you tell us briefly about what was the company about? What was the product? Maybe the listeners of today, some of them don't even know what biscuits are.
Yeah, it's. Well, as a mother of the company, but anyway, what happened was that all the floppy disks.
It's not a floppy disk. It's korppu in Finnish, but three.
Like the ordinary
biscuits. Those were used to store anything you wrote in a computer at the there was no cloud services
not even email,
so we are that old, yeah. And I had made some kind of a thesis, I don't know what it was about, but anyway, a lot of work that I had all in one diskette, and I was stupid enough not to have a hard copy of it, and I lost everything because I had it in my purse, and it didn't work anymore. Yeah, and then I was of course quite mad, but I started to look for a solution that there must be a cover for this kind of or some kind of a box to avoid me from not doing it again or losing this info again, and there was not one, and then Markus came to, we started thinking about it.
There were boxes, but the boxes were for 10.
10, yeah, exactly. And I was all
big, and something that doesn't fit in your purse.
Yeah, and I can already see myself now starting this kind of like story in a very same way as we did like 30 years ago, because that was a big thing in that time, that there were no startup companies at all, and especially these kind of where there were students from all these universities combining their kind of like thinking. So there was a perfect timing, I would say, for this. So it gained quite a lot of publicity altogether.
Tons of articles.
So now thinking what a minor object it was, and the idea and all is very, very simple. But we seem to be in every single interview explaining this
and maybe if I continue a little about the I remember that you presented this kind of a need we were eating in our mother's place and you introduced this need that you have and told about how pissed off you were about the kind of not having a backup of the disk and so then we started to think about it together that it should be some sort of a pocket. But then these little pockets and the disks would be all over your purse and we should have some sort of a way to connect it, whether it would be a chain or some sort of a Lego joint or ideally one could look at them like a deck of cards spread in your hand. And then I started, it was in Mustikkamaa in some kind of a dock harbor. They had we had a boat there and this guy allowed me to use his workshop.
Oh.
And there I did some kind of a big prototype of this bayonet type of connection device that we got patented.
And I think that was really the core of the whole thing. Then the more superficial design that was then created to prevent the discs breaking was like more a visual thing, I'd say. But it was really like the
connectivity and the patent we got for that.
And at that time we were pretty fresh even as students and I didn't see injection molding as an obvious manufacturing method. It could have been just as well been like laser cut or water cut out of sheets and somehow ultra welded together. We were totally kind of, or at least I was like a pretty lost of everything.
Yeah, I think we all were.
We all were.
Yeah, I don't know, we still are, but it was still, what I remember from those times was that the aim all the time was to do everything, like, I don't know, by the book, but anyway, and like be super clever with everything. Mm. So that, and we were aiming at going international from the day one.
Definitely.
All this, which was
was it like 10 years ago that was the phrase of Born Global? But I think we were that already like 30 years ago without knowing it.
And we did go global. We did go actually with the idea later on to New York. There was this GE had sold some Hornets for Finnish state or Finland, and so there was this possibility to go there, and I found an office in Manhattan, and there I went, and with no money really, and started targeting all these iOmegas and Apples.
I think that was companies. Really brave.
Yeah,
and the most concrete sign for us was that we had at our office we had a fax machine.
Yeah.
They always late, very late in the evening, the paper started rolling out, and there was like tens of pages of some ideas and reports from New York.
Yeah. So,
and how long did it last with the company? What was the time frame?
Quite a few years, because then we also developed two other
products. Yeah.
There was a cover for iOmegas Zip, which was a big,
and I think nobody knows today.
Yeah. Nobody, yeah, like, that's iOmega is gone, and also one for a CD, and DVDs, of course, and with the same idea that you could connect them together. And well, what we tried to sell them for was to all these disc companies as a promotional tool to be added with that when you sell the discs.
I remember when we expanded the portfolio that we were somewhat aware of it, that the market will vanish at some point.
Yes, of
and so we like. I think that we had the idea that we must be quick enough in order to really to cash it.
Create the brand and there was so many lessons learned actually during those times. Not only that, well, we first started with the brand called Disc Cover, and which was quite good for the purpose. But then it turned out that in Germany there was similar logo or the
trademark
registered on that class, and we needed to change, and that was a very, very, I think, healthy lesson about how expensive it becomes.
Exactly, and about the importance of the IPR in general.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. So yeah, it was really a university of a best kind. I think.
It's amazing that if you are like have a lot of energy, and if you are a bit naive. So it can take you pretty far.
Exactly. Exactly.
In hindsight, maybe a bit too far.
Yes, exactly.
But I think that's exactly the point that I can't help thinking of it. But if one could combine like the experience of today to that energy and enthusiasm of we were like 25 years old, everybody, then. So that it would be really fantastic. But today, when I see people of that age, I somehow think that don't ever try to repeat. it's all too hard. But I think the what was also the superpower was exactly that we didn't know that it wouldn't be possible.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. But for me, actually, I must say that for the rest of my career, I've been seeking for this kind of spirit.
Yeah.
And even today, I feel that that's perhaps the most important thing, to have the energy and the but we, I think, at least from my part, and I think it was the same with you, that we really appreciated each other's kind of like angles, and so it was a perfect IDBM project also in that respect, that even though we did of course have opinions on each other's fields, but still we I think the last word was always
exactly
on the side. Who
thinking,
was
and thinking really in practical terms, that we really did end up with a bankruptcy. I think we all lost also some money,
yeah.
but a little more than just pocket money.
Yeah.
But I think that also the proof that we're today here together.
Yeah. So and we are good friends, and we are. Yeah. Of course, yeah. You know,
I just got my share paid back last year.
I need to discuss with you then.
But it brought a lot of good because, well, at least we met each other and we are here. And and for me personally, this was kind of a way I sneaked into Fiskars through the back door.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So you are now talking about this working in a cross-disciplinary team. I think it was quite nice that you said that then you all appreciated your different angles. So how would you describe, what are the benefits of working in this kind of team setup?
I don't know, I think it's quite obvious, isn't it? Yeah, that it's just kind of, nobody can know everything today and as before, I think. You need to have a lot of knowledge working alone, nobody can have that.
But I have done a lot of that, working alone, and it's always like, when you get somebody else involved and have the possibility to explain your ideas and so it always kind of rockets the development, but I don't see any other possibility. I mean, like in today's competitive world, the kind of collaboration with different fields.
Exactly.
That is the only way to do it.
And I think, as you said earlier, that this also, our team also grew out of necessity, that it was not like just an idea that let's start working through this, multidisciplinary. I think maybe the question would be today that maybe these three views are not enough. That you need
definitely
to lot of, like IT. Let's say AI, IT, sustainability, all sorts of things. That I think that it just the cross-disciplinary team just has to be bigger and have more dimensions today.
And what are then the challenges of working in a very multidisciplinary team? Have you encountered, like, not thinking only about the IDBM setup, but in general?
I think maybe this might sound a bit old-fashioned, but finding the common language, that it, of course, this is not a question only of what background you have, but maybe slightly also a question of personality. And what you brought also up earlier, that having the true, like, appreciation for what the others do, that sometimes, if I think our agency working with several external experts and so on, that sometimes you might face some sort of a distortion of the perspective that certain people might, or let's say I as a designer might, like, overvalue the input of design and then maybe undermine the other disciplines. That might be something to really find the right balance and then like goal-oriented, see that what would be the optimal way. But generally, of course, as I said earlier, it's a necessity anyway.
And of course, it's important to understand the terminology used in the different disciplines. Otherwise, also, it's a little bit difficult than to communicate.
Yeah. Do you feel that there would be a lack of vocabulary? Or is it really a...
In my opinion, that is not a problem. Yeah. I see, like, one challenge in that, like, even if you have all these different skills together, you have the people, you have the perfect team, how to make it work together?
Right.
That is the challenge.
That's then a question of leadership and management as well.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
And that brings that. What I would add is lack of time. That somehow the leaders of today or the management or perhaps it comes back to the owners or the investors, that there seems to be always such a hurry that that we cut corners in a way. Somehow I see why there is need for you know, to go and test the market, have something to test with, but then at the end of the day, you also have to have a really good good service or really good product to come to the market with, and that you cannot accelerate too much.
Yeah. And maybe the, generally coming to the question of that, what is the relation of, like, if we think in a company or in a corporate context, that what that the companies are typically good at repeating what they are doing, and then like reinventing what they are doing, generally developing new is quite another task and demands quite other skills. And I think finding that balance as well is sometimes quite challenging.
Exactly. Yeah, like doing something that has been done before, just in a bit different form, and then doing something totally new.
Yeah.
That from a product design and a product development point of view, those are totally two different.
Exactly.
Totally. It's like a, it's not even 10 times more difficult and time consuming and risky, but 1,000 times, depending on the object, of course.
Mm.
And if we don't do that, nothing new happens.
Yes.
So then we need to invest the time and the money and all the creativity.
We are slowly approaching the topic of how do we get Finnish economy in the rise again? this is your favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, we could go into that now and then.
Don't be sure.
Yeah, but I have still here one question that we could go into before we go into the competitiveness of Finland. About creativity, that how can you foster creativity and then can creativity be managed? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think from Fiskars you have a lot of good quotes.
It's kind of a if you go to LinkedIn posts, it's a lot of posts about creativity and
innovation,
creativity, innovation, and so on. And sometimes I have a feeling that it's kind of a snake oil, this creativity, that hey, we just have to be more creative. But to me, creativity means that you get a good team together, you have some like a meaningful real problem to solve, and then you delve into the problem and you work and work and work and do a lot of prototypes and testing and learn from it and just hard work, and then and well, of course, concentrate that you are doing the right things, and then you come up out with something that has not existed before and is new and is good. And that is because it is new, you have created something. That is creativity to me. So, but there is no shortcut to work. Only shortcut is that you can try to avoid doing unnecessary thing and doing kind of a keeping the focus in right place. But work and sweat is required for creativity.
And then also maybe I think it's one thing to be a creative individual when you only need to manage what you are doing and you can do it as you like. But once you have a team, of course you need to be sure that the team setup is right, that you have like people who understand what should be done and are good at what they are doing. But maybe in a creating teamwork, I think it's quite important also to try to foster an atmosphere that is generally that is like positive and seeking for new solutions, and also that even though this is a cliche, that you encourage also failing, so that that people have somehow that they are able to contribute in a best possible way. I think this is easy to say, and in practice sometimes quite difficult.
Like when you're designing something new, it's that hasn't existed before. You just have to get it started. You have to make the first prototype, something which is typically always something that is not very convincing. And you have to have the self-esteem to bring that to the table so the others can say that, okay, that is good and that is bad.
And that is like generally thinking about developing anything new. I think it's a good point what you bring up, that it's like, of course you can work in a structured way, and you can like search for information and all sorts of things and arrange creative sessions and so on. But I think, as you said, the most important thing is to start doing. And I mean that just to like that you and trust the process, trust that you will approach something interesting once you just start doing things.
Yes, and when you start, you get something done, and then a few rounds of prototypes, and then you are actually realizing, okay, this is the problem that we are solving.
Right, like learning by doing. Yeah. I don't know if design thinking is any longer on your list of questions, but I have sometimes like half seriously said that I would rather talk about design doing than design thinking, especially in that notion, as you know, bringing that.
I like this term. I think it's much more relevant than design thinking. So
design thinking is slightly taking like a distance and taking like an academic overview that this is how we think it should be, but in reality it's much more about doing and learning
at the same time. We need to highlight this for sure. But what is design business management these days? I think it has changed over the 30 years. So when you have started to study international design business management, it was totally different than what it is now. But how do you see it? What is it at the moment?
I have no clue, to be honest. No, but in that sense, it's just words. I don't know. I would think that the aim is to do internationally interesting new business, whether it's IT systems, AI things, products, services. The processes are not the same, more developed. When we were studying, you remember how it was more like a series of things that you
like
did,
a linear,
process, and that was taught, and now it's sprints and you get something out. So it's more closer to this doing what you are now talking about.
I think also what had changed during, if we think about 30 years ago and now, when one could say that the digitalization really broke through, it was like 20 years ago. So, but I think that, as you say, that at that time still, I think almost all what we also discussed, it was, as I said, a linear process. Also the basic design thinking, double diamond, it's more or less a linear process. And now if you think it's about like, it's about agile development, or it's about this lean startup and so on, which is more based on the idea of continuous development. And I think has to do with also the difference that if you are designing a physical object, you invest on tooling and you do it like a more or less with one shot. But then with the digital things, you can easily iterate it every day if you like. Of course, then not to talk about the AI, which I know very little about. But I think there is a very very big difference in just thinking about the developing processes.
I see it like if I think of IDBM, that if we look at a Finnish company today. Companies understand the value of design, they understand the value of brand and marketing and storytelling and being international and so on. They have covered everything from that perspective pretty well. Or there isn't any companies who don't think about these things. But then we go a bit deeper into designing product, and it doesn't, we don't see it there anymore. Mm. Or it's very rare. That the kind of a holistic approach or this kind of a design doing approach can be seen in practice in hands-on doing. Mm.
Is it? Yeah.
That's, but maybe that's also a good point. That maybe the things that like the IDBM were started for to get all the different aspects on a balanced way into the management team. That, as you said, that the companies are definitely like better off today than they were then. I would slightly disagree saying that all the companies, and this is one of the things that, I mean, typically the design community starts talking about really advanced things all the time. Mm-hmm. And I have the feeling that half of the Finnish companies haven't even caught the first train. And there is still, I mean, I think they also basically probably know what should be done, but they don't do it in practice. That there is, just to say that I think there is also still, there is a lot of work to do. If we think about traditional design management, which was, I think, it was like a popular term in 1989, I think, but it's still relevant. But if you say so, you are really labeled as a dinosaur. But I think it's so that some of the things I think are very, very valid still. But then generally, probably companies are better off.
Okay, now. So our economy hasn't been growing for the past 20 years. And maybe you have some ideas on this, that how could Finland's long-term competitiveness be strengthened?
This was definitely your call.
No, I was saying, and I repeat now, that it's when we were young, we were really enthusiastic about this. I remember arranging these Suomi nousuun type of dinners and with my friends, and we were really trying to think that, okay, what should we do? And I think also the founding of the company was partly due to this, that I strongly felt that yes, now we have got gotten the education, and we have the means, and we are very, very privileged in many ways, that we have to kind of like make something out of this that is bringing money to this economy, and that's why you start companies that and I think also that modern startups, which are all made to be international, I trust that they have this similar idea. So like it was then, it still is. I think the future is in the hands of next generation, and this generation that is now founding these companies. So in many respects, I do see that this IDBM kind of a spirit, and the startup spirit is what will solve the problem in the long run.
So yes, that we should have more funding for these new companies, not so much on the kind of the existing or the traditional.
Well, they are companies doing better job in driving for growth, and this one article, Arni.
The McKinsey report.
McKinsey report. He found the other week, and we already earlier discussed about it, that how, well, Arni will tell what that showed, but it was interesting, and it shows very clearly that the big companies and the industrial companies in Finland, they seem to have more of this aim to store the value in a way and give it away to the shareholders instead of investing
exactly
to the future growth. And this is absolutely the kind of like the opposite of what these young entrepreneurs are doing today, and what I believe we were also doing early days.
Just about the funding, that I think I don't know, has any of us been this year in Slush?
No, it's going on. But it seems that is in good hands.
What they just say in the news is that, if I got it right, that the funding capital presented there, of course not in real investments, but it was, if I got it right, was 3,500 billion. Euros worth
like
of potential investment. Yeah. Of course, then what is realized is a different thing. But maybe taking it further from the McKinsey report, I mean, I have also I haven't really deep dived it in, but I think the basic message was that the study was looking at the top 5,000 companies in the world, and then it was the top 20 from Finland that fit into the category. And the main conclusion was that the average peer group grew 8% annually, whereas the Finnish companies at the same time, it was somewhere between 2 and 3. And then there was like the calculation that cumulatively from the past 10 years that we have lost 80 billion euros of revenues because of that. And then there were like different reasons why it is that way. But one of the key things was exactly that the typically Finnish stock listed companies they tend to pay high dividends compared to the peer groups in Europe and Nordic countries. And then I just checked quickly that what was the total sum of it, not only the top 20, but all stock listed companies, that they paid something around 13 billion euros of dividends last year. Let's say we would only take 10% of that, it would be 1.3 billion. And then simultaneously 2024, the amount of R&D expenditure in all Finnish companies was somewhere around 6 billion euros. So it would be just 20% increase, just taking that one 10%, which at least to my ear sounds like nobody would bother if the dividends were lower at 10%. Of course, some like the pension companies might disagree, but still, coming to the point that I think that there is often the phrase saying that we lack the funding or we don't have enough money to invest on. But if we think that, I think everybody agrees that one really secured way to provide future growth is to invest in R&D. And the money is evidently there. And I think it doesn't need any like special tricks. It would be simply changing the company policies and then simply investing more there, which is what all the other companies in other countries than Finland invest more in.
Yeah. And that is as said, that if you want to create something new and successful, you have to work hard, and work is expensive.
Exactly.
So investment is needed.
I don't know, I hope nobody feels offended, but there is somehow like, I think within Finnish companies, there is this winter war mentality that we just somehow, putting very little effort, always end up with something fantastic. And I think that comes down to what you're saying, that it's really, if you want to achieve something, if you want to be good, you need to invest time and money and talent. And there is no shortcut there.
There is no shortcut. And this is not even creativity.
Not even creativity.
Innovation.
Or, I mean...
Repeating that.
AI might be a silver bullet. We don't know.
That's why we are so excited about AI, because we think that it could be something that does the work for us.
Exactly. But I think this is like coming to the original point, that I think there is still some sort of a mental gap there, thinking that we for some reason would not need to invest as much as the Swedish companies, for instance. And then we are looking at Volvo and IKEA and all sorts of wondering that how come they are so wonderful.
Mm. And I think that also on a national level, I guess, like for example in Denmark, they are investing quite a lot in companies.
Yes.
So then it's a totally different level than what and we if, are
if
doing
you look,
here.
If you look at the national debt levels in Denmark and Sweden and Finland, they are totally on a different level.
But then what kind of role could intangible value creation play in this competitiveness or this long-term competitiveness?
If we come to back to the R&D expenditure, it's all about intangible value. So that I would say that it's almost like, of course, you can think of traditional investments on data centers and factories and so on. Mm-hmm. But I think if we are talking about R&D, I would include like design and branding and all sorts of intangible things there into mm-hmm. that basket simply. Mm-hmm.
Everybody understands the conflict about kind of how we have been just discussing that how can we support the Finnish economy and design products that can be produced here or for the Finnish companies, and at the same time we talk about that how can we do as little as possible.
Exactly.
So there is a conflict there. I see, or I kind of purchase my good confidence. Is that the right word? By just trying to do everything that I do as well as possible.
Yeah.
So, and of course, sustainability is always a thing that must be considered, but it cannot be a starting point for a product, because always the kind of the product that doesn't exist is the most sustainable solution. Of course, if you can push some, or if you can make a more sustainable alternative for an existing product, that will make some sort of a difference.
And there is, I mean, of course, today we have like, there is, let's say, I receive weekly some sort of a sustainability design training or something, that there are a lot of like information how you should be doing it. But I think that on the top always comes when you were talking about physical products, is that the best thing that you can do is to design a relevant product that can stay long in the use, and that is like the single most important thing, unless you are talking about some like disposables or something. But I think it goes to the point of saying that, okay, if we can push out from the market some worse alternatives, but it's not as simple.
I was once contacted by a potential customer who asked that, hey, you know plastics, that what could we do with the polyamide that is coming from the fishing nets rescued from the ocean? What would be a good product for that? Because they already had this sustainable story.
Yes.
And that is like that's greenwash in
your mind.
That's nothing, but quite like exotic starting point for a project.
But, yeah. We don't need anything. the need is to come up with something new that can be sold. Yeah. And the fishing net just made a cool story around it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have now here one last question. You can think about this for a while, so it's okay. We can then edit out all the thinking time. What would you say to your 25-year-old self?
This is the question that you see always in Helsinki Sanomat when they have the
15
years
interviews. It's 20 year in that one, but I was thinking now you were about 25 and you were doing the IDBM, so.
So that was 30 years ago in my case. Yes.
I have one like a story for this. Like
when I
did my master thesis in design of injection molded products, and we had already designed a few injection molded covers for a storage media, and then working in pentagon design, we had some projects there, and I was trying to be pretty skilled. I was one of the first SolidWorks users in Finland, and then I entered Fiskars R&D. And before that, I thought that maybe I could start a kind of a consultancy, because I know so much about plastics and plastic product design and injection molding and so. So and then there was this opportunity to join Fiskars, and okay, I go there, and that was just a kind of a so awesome like a learning experience that got all these great people, and Fiskars was a company, and it's a company that does the injection molding tools and the actual tooling and production and assembly and product design and testing and everything themselves. And in, let's say, half a year, I had learned so much compared to what I knew before that. Yeah. And still I understood that I don't know anything about anything. So of course it's not very comfortable, but it's, and that would be maybe a message to myself that even though I feel like I'm an expert, I know, so there is one lifetime is not enough. You have to be kind of a, what is it, noble and humble.
You need to
be humble and accept that you don't know anything about, or you don't know everything, and talk to the people who know that know, and try to dig the information from them and do it together.
Mm. Excellent.
I think I would be actually pretty much on the same lines. Well, it could tell us a little bit as siblings that we are inborn with this self-confidence that we manage and we know and then at the end, yes, learn that perhaps not so much, and so that try to be not only humble, but also curious about other people's points of views. Also, I think that it's needed this spirit of pushing forward, especially if you are an entrepreneur. But still, none of us does anything alone here, and it's always about other people getting customers excited and learning from them and all this. So it's a, keep the curiosity.
That's a good advice.
Maybe also, I think this might be a bit of a cliche, but maybe also to somehow trust your instinct that I think the world of fool is like ready-made paths that you are expected to take. And I'm not so sure that it fits everybody. And I think today's students are better in that. They are like, they see it more openly that what can they do? And then, I mean, do the decision and see what happens. I mean, you never know what would be the other option. But I think there is a really, really good advice that I've got. I read it somewhere just recently. But was that especially when you are young and entering the field, you get a lot of advices what to do. And you get them mostly from people who are not really where you are going. And I think the advice was that only take serious advice from people who are where you want to be. And I think that is really, it has something. I've also I've started listening to people a bit differently lately because of that.
That's excellent. So be curious, be humble, and trust your instinct.
Yeah. That might be a good,
that's a good summary.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Hey, our time is running out. So fantastic. I thank you. Thank you for the discussions. It was really wonderful to have you here and hear about your thoughts and your experiences.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For the invitation. Thank you.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. Good. Good. So we're done. Thank you for listening. I am your host, Irina Viippola. This episode was edited by me and Aditya Parekh and produced by the IDBM program at Aalto University. Jos joku menee esimerkiksi, tuntuu, että ei sanonut sanottua tätä oikein, niin sitten sano uudestaan, koska sitten mähän leikkelen näitä.
No niin.
Eli ei ole
kova duuni. Jumalauta. Kun mä just ajattelin nää nuoret, mitä sä sanot niitä englantia, niin se on hyvä show, koska ne kuuntelee 5 minuuttia noita täydellisiä englantia.
Joo, ja tästä ei tule mitään.